So according to the families, good listeners allow others to share their personal stories, whatever that story is, and without judgment. You can demonstrate empathy by listening carefully without interrupting or minimizing their concerns, pain, complaints, and issues. One of the examples that a parent shared is you shouldn't worry about what you can't change. You just have to deal with it. Okay, thumbs up if you think that's encouraging. Thumbs down if you think it's discouraging. Absolutely. I'm saying don't worry, but these are very real concerns. Whenever someone speaks in a way that demeans, attacks, criticizes, or minimizes me, it makes me want to retaliate and defend myself. I feel embarrassed when others say those things to me. So parents feel validated when they're listened to, and in this case, they were embarrassed versus being heard or listened to. Phrases that typically start, "you should," usually end with unwarranted advice. What our parents asked is they said, only offer assistance, advice, and help. Guess when?
Yes.
When asked. You guys probably rated yourself pretty high on that. But yes, when asked. Offering unsolicited advice, or worse yet, ignorant advice, fails to recognize the family as the true expert of their child. Parents hold all the experiences and insight about what works for them. If we ignore their well-developed insights and their wisdom, then that's discouraging. Here's an example that a parent shared. If someone invited us over to a late gathering, I said that our son with special needs wouldn't be able to stay up that late. And they would say, he'll be fine. He would have fun. They don't understand his limitations, and they don't see that my family also has specific limitations. Also, what they said on offering ignorant insight is that naive people think they know what we should do, but have no idea what we have to deal with. And that actually really came to life in my personal life as an occupational therapist when I went overseas to live with a family who had a child with special needs. And I got to see firsthand what all the families deal with. And when I would make a suggestion of, well, you just need to do his homework in a non-distracting environment, that'll really help him. Well, when I saw the mom go into her non-distracting environment, she's in the kitchen, the TV's going, she has another sibling of the brother is involved, keeps interrupting, asking for mom. A lady who's doing the cooking keeps asking questions, the phone's ringing, the door is getting answered, tons of these interruptions, but this is a non-distracting environment. So it really changed the recommendations that I give the family. I don't know what all they go through at home, and so I need to be sensitive and listen to them for what works and be able to modify my suggestions to fit what they need. Affirmation and acceptance removes judgment. And according to the families, it keeps them going, as they often feel unfairly put down by others. All right, I'm going to ask Chuck and Roxanne, kind of put them on the spot. They didn't know the questions ahead of time. But I would love for each of you to give an example of a time you felt judged or were given ignorant advice. And if you don't have an example of that, which I hope you don't, but I'm sure you do. Then give an example of how to encourage your specific family with an affirmation or with acceptance.
I feel very blessed that I'm in an environment. Maybe I just kind of isolated myself in an environment after my son's diagnosis, and we've had and our church has been extremely supportive of our process and Sunday school and maybe I kind of sheltered my kiddo, but I think one of the things that I've really been encouraged by our family is when I've had, pick them up from Sunday school or pick them up from different places and just hear positive things you hear just, oh, well, he interacted with this little girl today, you know, little things like that. My son is a 7-year-old with autism, and yeah, that you always just want him to be able to do the interacting, and when you hear, oh, he played with a little boy today, or it was just so encouraging to see him to talk to somebody when usually he's just kind of in his corner or he's not interested in what's really being engaged in. And so over the years, those have been really some of the most encouraging things, is to hear the positive things that he's done. As far as being discouraged, perhaps it's just been blocked out of my memory or something, but I think it's been a while since I've had people provide unwanted advice. And one of the things I think our church is very good at is reflective listening and, you know, listening for heaven's sake. And people say, well, it sounds like you feel this way rather than you should do this. But it's more reflecting on how I feel rather than what I should do. So
from what I just heard,
reflective listening
is that interactions for your son are very important to you. Mm-hmm. So then as a therapist, as someone who's serving Roxanne's family, as a Sunday school teacher or involved in some way with her child, I'm gonna pick out those strengths and what he does well. And that's what I'm gonna be reporting to Roxanne. That's encouraging for you.
I have a question for Roxanne. Yes. Roxanne. Autism is not well understood by a lot of us, and I expect that gets in the way sometimes of interactions with people who just don't know enough about it. Is there a solution to that? Is there something that we ought to be doing besides Googling autism? I'm just trying to understand that.
Well, I think the spectrum is enormous. And every kid seems to respond differently to different types of interaction. I've seen, kids in Sunday school. I also teach 3- and 4-year-old Sunday school too. And I've seen, some of these kids do well with certain kids, and trying to look at what are the strengths within those relationships that are successful. Little girl likes to hold stuff. Kurt, his sort of security is, reciting numbers or something that deals with the figures and numbers. So trying to work with that parent and say, what is going to make your child able to engage in Sunday school or engage in the worship time? This week may be different than the next week. So I found a lot too, because autism's so you have your good weeks and your bad weeks, so it's really working with the parent and saying, what can we do to make sure that we can make this an engaging and successful time for you. So it is really broad.
Yeah, I think that's the perfect answer, because like she said, the spectrum of autism will be so broad that there might be a child that you're working with that you have no idea, he just seems a little quirky. All the way to the other extreme where the child might be very involved and might not even be able to talk, but there's other ways that he can communicate. So if he kind of knows that he can't talk, then definitely going back to the mom and saying, well, how does he share? Let me know what he wants or what he likes. And again, Roxanne put it so perfectly that the parents are going to be the experts. They're going to be the best ones to find out about that particular child. You can still research, Google it and have some other autism resources. But again, I really think going for more general information about it. But if you really want to know specifically how to work with a certain child, then the parents are going to be the experts for that.
So do you give something to the Sunday school teacher or whatever to tell us about your child?
We have probably a close enough relationship that we can just talk about it. You know, he just came out of a Sunday school class where, you know, I've known the Sunday school teachers for years and years and years. They've known of his diagnosis for years and years and years. You know, we also have a developmental psychologist who's a Sunday school teacher who is, you know, a good reflective listener too. And you know, I feel like we just have a very strong relationship over his diagnoses, that we've been able to talk about that, that they can understand that. So, I mean, he's 7 years old and this has been 4.5 years, and, you know, so that's our experience. You know, if you're in a newer environment, or you have a new kid come in, it may be helpful to have something written down and talking about, okay, well, you know, maybe, you know, have this particular book out, or maybe have something soft for them to hold, or if they like to draw or something. I mean, really, the kids are just, seems like every kid is different, and right. So different too. So,
and that doesn't go just for autism. Yeah. Think about for us. Right. What makes us relax? It's going to be different for you, Carolyn. Right. It's going to be different for you, Karen. It's going to be different for me. I mean, like classical music, I'm not like a little jazz. You know, just different things are going to comfort or help us pay better attention different ways. I want to pass it over to Chuck and ask if there's any examples that you might have of something that has encouraged your family or, on the other hand, discouraged them.
I think we share with Roxanne similar on the when we felt judged and given anger advice. It's been a long time. Mm-hmm. That's probably just because we've learned to ignore it. It was like, oh yeah, we're surrounded by that. We're not going to focus on that. My daughter's 9 years old. She has a terminal disease. It's called Canavan's disease. It's a strange genetic defect in her brain. So she's basically a 9-year-old infant. She's completely helpless. Can't even hold her head up. Doesn't walk or talk or anything. So she's capable of social interaction. That's about it. We met this lady at a funeral of all places, who like cornered us and talked to us and insisted that we needed to get Natalie into school and she would get so much out of school, and she wouldn't. She like latched on and wouldn't let go, and we didn't even know this lady. She's just friend of a friend of a friend somehow. So you know, we listened and she finally said her piece and moved on, and I was just looking at my life, and I have a strange sense of humor, so part of me is,
what'd you say, Chuck?
Part of me is, I said, okay, well, thank you. But part of me is like tremendously entertained by things like that. It's just like, this is awesome, you can't make this up. Like there really are people like that. It's like, oh my goodness gracious, you know, all you can do is, okay, well, think about it, or thank you, nice to meet you.
I'm going to read the book you write about the stories.
I mean, but we've had many, many interactions with many, many people like that over the years. Whether it's people in the educational system, and that's a whole separate book you could write, the treats we have there. We finally just pulled her out of school and gave like a lot of that. Mm-hmm. She was in the system just to be able to get a OT and PT services at home. She never actually attended class. But, you know, on the more positive side, things that encourage my wife and I, things that, you know, affirm us, that shows that people accept us. It's just, we actually attend church here at Christ Church Mason. Been here about 4 years because of the Arms Wide Open program. We had friends that attended here that we've been in Bible study with way back when. They were college age and we were helping lead it. Got to know them when they were, you know, 18, 19. They started dating, got married. So we had this history, we felt comfortable. It was a good fit for where Natalie was at the time, with her age and our old church. Just wasn't working out for various reasons. So that was a huge blessing God dropped on us. Just, you know, we're encouraged by the Lord showing us where to go. That's best for our daughter. And it can also meet our spiritual needs. You know, hit church once or twice a week. But just coming in the building each Sunday morning, there's this one particular elderly lady, I don't even know her name. She always seeks us out. She says hi to Natalie, acknowledges her presence, either pats her on the head or gives her a little kiss, calls her sweetie. I don't even know if she knows Natalie's name. But she knows who we are. That we're just, hey, there's the kid in the wheelchair and the pretty hair. And she had big rock star curly hair, let it grow. But that's just little things like that that you wouldn't think. No, she's just a greeter at the door, but it's more than that. It's, she has a genuine concern for everybody. You know, she greets everyone, but for some reason she focuses on my daughter and remembers to single her out. So just little things like that.
I love
but
it.
They add up.
Check, you've already touched on a couple of things that we're going to talk about in the interactions. And it can be daunting if you have not been around some children with that, whatever particular diagnosis they may have. You may feel like you're not equipped because you don't know much about it, but you don't have to be equipped to interact with that child. As Chuck said, this lady may not even know Natalie's name, but the fact that she gets on that child's level and greets, it's a simple task to do, to smile and say hello to the family or the child. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. All right. I keep wanting to hear from the experts, so we're going to pass up on our group time for this round. But what I want you to do is we're going to take just 1 minute. I'm going to time this. And I want you to think about the question. We're going to answer this question in your little groups, but instead just think about it in your head. And then also, I'll give you 1 minute to write down any insights that you had just learned from Roxanne or Chuck. All right, we're going to move along to the interaction piece. Children and families sense when they're being ignored, avoided, or when their child's behavior is considered disrupting. Several friends and family members do not know how to deal with our son's situation. They tend to ignore us by never even asking about our son. So something as simple as an interaction when maybe you're talking with a family, if I don't ask Chuck how Natalie's doing, but I might ask about other parts of his life, then I'm essentially ignoring that child. So engaging a child with special needs into your world, just like the caregiver or the greeter at church engages Natalie, if you engage the child into your world, it breaks that feeling of being ignored. Simply asking how the son is doing, and like I said, getting on that child's level and giving them a smile and saying hello, can really break that pattern of feeling ignored. This is what a parent said. When a stranger or even someone I know is extra nice to Chris, it touches my heart. And I think you used something similar about it touching your heart. What's discouraging, according to these families, is a failure to engage the child in the group activity. This is what the family member said. Watching our son with special needs sitting on the sidelines at parties or games while the other children are running around and playing, that's discouraging. Figuring creative ways to include a child with special needs prevents that isolation. Here's an example that a parent gave of facilitating meaningful interaction. Our oldest son's baseball and football teams always include him in the team huddle. He even has a team jersey. That makes him really feel like a part of the team. So he's not necessarily playing the game, but he's a part of the team through the jersey and inviting him to that huddle. Families, they can also easily become isolated just because of the demands that they face. The friends who break through family isolation by giving their time with full trust, full acceptance, and no strings attached prevent the family from feeling isolated. Also, assuming that the child acts the way they do because of poor parenting is kind of a form of judging, but it also isolates the parents as well. This is what the family says. It is discouraging and aggravating for people to hint that our son is allowed to misbehave because we do not correct him. That could not be farther from the truth. It hurts to realize that people blame us for our hard-to-manage child's behavior. All right, so for Chuck and Roxanne, can you give us an example of a time you or your child were ignored or felt isolated? Or flip side, it sounds like there's a lot of healthy things going on and encouragement given to your family. So a time your child was included in a meaningful interaction or someone broke through that isolation, either for your child or for your family. And check, why don't we start with you this time? Unless you have something.
The time Natalie was included in a meaningful interaction last year, one of our nurses that was caring for her during the day at the time, it's both his daughters, healthy daughters, were on a little soccer team out in Trenton. They decided they wanted Natalie to be on the soccer team. And Natalie can't play soccer. But we got her a jersey and she went to all the games. Susan took her in the band and rolled her out there. She was just part of the team, you know. I said, yeah, she's the mascot. And Mike, no, she's not the mascot. She's like, she was the good left charm. And so, you know, they had an undefeated season. So I was like, yeah, it worked, you know, Natalie's her good luck charm. But that was, you know, Natalie doesn't care. She doesn't necessarily know what's going on. She just knows I'm with her, her mommy's with her, or whatever. But she doesn't necessarily know where she's at a soccer game. She just knows it's loud and a bunch of people are talking. But that was more for Susan, to go out and try to do some kind of normal activity that a healthy kid would get to do. So that was a big deal.
And so probably children about that age are out, and the entire family, they're out at soccer games and doing those kind of activities. So this is a way to include Chuck and Millie and the whole family in an activity that these families normally would be
doing. And they gave us a soccer jersey because last year she was a soccer zombie for Halloween. So it all worked out. Handed her out of that soccer jersey.
That's great. How about you, Roxanne?
Well, I'll just touch on the first one, and I think that that there are certain things that I know that her will just hate going to, you know, like we have a homeschool gym that meets after the homeschool co-op, and the first time was very unsuccessful, and so I said, okay, well, we'll just leave that gym time, and I was part of the co-op at gym last week, and he had just go in there, and he's like this, and he's like, I want to leave, and I was just like, you know, that's, I understand, you know, like I, it was almost me trying to force him into something, and yet it was still, it was too busy, so, you know, kids aren't playing with him, and so for me, I felt isolated, and because, you know, here I am with my kid who can't participate, and but I knew that that's part of his limitation. Mm-hmm. The noise and the activity and everything. So I it wasn't intentional or anything like that, but it was just sort of, that's a limitation. As far as being encouraged, last year we had a wonderful experience with his kindergarten. Our church has a co-op kindergarten as part of the preschool, and somehow God just put the right people there. You know, it was eight kids, and you know, just the most wonderful children who, and I think at that age too, at 5 and 6, they weren't totally aware that he was autistic. They knew he was quirky and that he, but like nobody ever identified it as autism or anything. So But parents just loved him, took their time with him. The teacher was extremely patient. I was in the class 2 times a month, and I could just see that, you know, the efforts that the kids were making to really just, you know, engage with him. So it was something like we had just prayed about for years and years. And every year we just pray about, like, what are we going to do at school, you know? And God just put the people in place for that. So
you don't want to underestimate the power God has.
Yeah.
In those kinds of situations, I know as a therapist, there's oftentimes a lot of God giving strength, giving ideas. You know, help me with this child, and that's okay. You guys have, you can tap into that just as much as the families can be praying for the right fit of the children. What I want to do is go into the group activity, share your story. But let's share Roxanne's story for a second. I had some makeshift questions, but I want to follow up on what you said about your little Kurt going into a gym. So let's say that we're all at this gym, and we see Roxanne over there with her little guy saying, I want to go home, you know, it hurts, it's too loud, kind of rocking doing this. Now, you know already from what encourages and what doesn't, what discourages, I'm not going to go over there and be like, you need to shape up your child. You know, like, you just need to time out. That's what your kid needs. I am not going to do that, right? We're not going to do that. No way. Goodbye. So I'm going to ask this and pose this to you, since you've been listening so well. I'd like for one of you, because I know you have ideas in your head of how to make Roxanne and little Kurt feel welcomed or comfortable, because she felt isolated in that moment. What are you going to do to help her not feel isolated? Ready? Go. Who has an answer?
Well, I would like to say that what I think that I would do is talk to Roxanne and find out what kinds of things Kurt would enjoy and provide an equal alternative, something that he would like to do during that time period so that he wouldn't have that stress and possibly cause a meltdown.
Okay. Tell me your name.
Lisa.
Lisa. You just improved your serve, and I didn't improve my throat. It comes with it.
Thank you.
All right, Roxanne, would that work if she came over and maybe instead of having him engage in the soccer game that's going on or getting on the team, maybe you had a ball that you handed to mom or took him aside and played with him on the side and just picked it. We can just pick it back and forth here or catch or something on the side.
I think just to add to that, it would be like, how could I have your child be a part of that little interaction? You know, I mean, you and your child, because there's other parents who are there. And because to me, like, it's great when he's interacting with other parents and other helpers and things like that. But like the moments that are just wonderful are when he's actually engaging with another kid. Because he's, you know, he will go to an adult and he'll go to a 2 year old. But that's for me. That's for my son. And then,
and so, see, I'm already assuming that I just want to get him in an activity.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Where mom's desire, because I didn't ask, did I? Mm-hmm. Mom's desire is actually to get engaged in a kid. And if I do that, then I could bring a kid that I know would kind of be cool with going away from the game and is good with all types of children and doesn't care about differences and engage that child with the little guy. Mm-hmm. Cool. Thank you, Roxanne.
Okay.
Great idea. All right, the third cluster that I found in the research, I put into a category called words and acts. So this isn't what they put these are the clusters or categories that the researchers put them in, but I just did it for today's presentation. So what do specific and sincere words of encouragement sound like to the families we serve? Want an example? You guys on the edge of your seats? Here's what a family member said. This would be an example of specific and sincere words of encouragement. I'm amazed at how well you keep the house with all you do. Right? How about, how do you manage to get to all the kids' events? So you're just acknowledging the efforts that the family has put into the little things that they do. Actually, the big tasks, really, that they do. Unexpected acts of kindness are another way to encourage families. And these include simply holding the door open, raking leaves, making dinner, feeding and changing the diaper of a child at church, asking if the family would like homegrown veggies. I'm not ignoring the family. I'm asking them if they like something. It's simple, but it's powerful to keep the families with a child from feeling isolated. Families have heard much advice from many professionals that include many things their child cannot do. So just as Gary Sweeten had mentioned, kind of that emphasis on what are the symptoms, what's wrong. The encouragers emphasize what the child can do for strength. A parent shared that our son has been through a lot in his young life, and we were told he would never do this or do that. There is nothing you cannot do if you want it. So taking that can-do attitude approach. And finally, telling a family that they are a great Christian for God because he gave them their child. That sounds like a compliment on the surface, but it is actually quite degrading to the family. Here's what they said. They describe these kinds of statements as having poor theology and are terribly confusing. It places us on a mythical pedestal of godly righteousness that will not allow us to be honest with discouragement, anger, or even enable us to ask for help. So I'm going to turn it back over to our experts. Give us an example of other faith-based statements that you may have heard along the way that were discouraging. And the flip side, give us an act of kindness that was unexpected along the way, or a faith-based statement that actually is encouraging for your family.
As far as an act of kindness, I think I'm just I've sort of just let all the discouraging things sort of, I don't know, but and maybe it probably came out in the research when we had a lot of time to reflect on it, but as far as kindness, there's a mom in the preschool that my son went to who is also in our homeschool co-op too, and she just always seems to reflect on God's goodness through everything. She'll say, oh, how are things going in this class? And how's things going at home? And I'm like, well, you know, it's a good mix of good and bad. And she's like, well, you know, God is always good. And he works for the good of those who love him. And you know, and sometimes it is kind of like, I don't see it right now, you know? But it's always good to know that those things, to reflect on those things, and like, yeah, you know, we have come a long way. We really, really have come a long way. And God is good through the real big struggles. It doesn't change God. My situation doesn't change who God is. And, you know, because I think it's... There's a lot of real moments, you know, that, you know, there's a lot of things that you can't change, and there's a lot of things that I just feel like I have no control over. But just little things like that, you know, God is good through all of it.
And it sounds like you have this authentic relationship with this person where she's able to say things like, God is still good mm-hmm. through all this, because she's probably seen you in the best of moments and probably has been with you.
The past couple years, 2 years, and our kids being in classes, yeah.
How about you,
Tom? I think it's a faith-based statement that was discouraging. When Allie first received her diagnosis, she knows this horrible thing. Someone at church came up to us. I think it was us. It could have been my wife, as she told me later. Don't remember, but... And kind of pulled her aside, just like, you know that people are going to be watching you to see how you handle this. You know, as a Christian, as a woman of God or a man of God, as a married couple of God. It's like, again, it's like, that's just awesome. You know, I can't make that up. I'm right. You know, I'm putting that on my list. It's like, oh my gosh, where does that come from? You know, I don't, you know, back to the bad theology, back to this, like, you know, we're not really in the age of Job where, you know, there's this bet between the God and the devil that the devil can crack Chuck and Susan because of Natalie's diagnosis. And that's not what's going on here. We're in the age of grace. And Natalie, because we live in a fallen world and God's grace is sufficient and he works for our good in all situations, etc. But to say that to someone who just, you know, fresh diagnosis that your kid's going to die, I don't know where that comes from. I don't know that. So don't do that, you know, because you're not doing that. Don't think that it's in a discouragement column.
Well, another one that I have found is that God doesn't give you any more than you can handle. And I'm not handling it very well at that moment. It's like, please, don't do that.
Thank you.
And,
Whoops.
But it's a terrible pro. That's terrible. But thank you for improving your serve and helping us improve ours.
Then the other one was, I can't believe they said this, is a horrible theologist. What did you do to deserve this? What did you, it's like a payback on something horrible that I've done.
And not only does it kind of put, like the parents have done something wrong, but you're kind of saying that the child is a burden. And oftentimes, trust me, these children, while there's a little bit more extra care or extra demands that come with that child is a blessing. And any of these families will say that Natalie is a blessing, that her is a blessing.
Right, but you have to be careful about that too, because it sounds encouraging, but I have found with autism that it's a blessing, but it can be a mixed bag of being a blessing at one moment and being, and you know it's a blessing, but at that moment, that can be a difficult thing to hear.
And
mine's a little older than your guys'. He's 14.
So you've been through a lot.
Yes.
14-year-old, so just being very sensitive to how things come across. Because I thought that lady probably had very, I'm just going to give her the benefit of the doubt and say that she had good intentions. She wanted to minister or say something spiritual or encouraging, and really it had the opposite effect. If that person had a relationship with you,
would it make it? I wish I did remember who it was. That would be perfect.
Can you remember it was a stranger or somebody that?
It wasn't a stranger. It was someone we knew. Okay. So we've been going to that church for 7 years. So we knew everybody. But it's just, we still talk about that one. Yeah. I'm sure that came up in the research. Here, put this in there.
All right. It is just about time to wrap up. So I want just to open up the floor for any remaining questions. I know it's very short and goes very quickly, but any remaining questions, especially for our experts while we have them in the room with us? Any questions that haven't been answered?
I'll ask a did I do the right thing question. My mother has 24 great-grandchildren, and she is unable to buy gifts at Christmas, so I do them for her. And at a certain age, along about 12, they start getting gift certificates versus toys. And one of the children is mentally challenged. And so the question was, when he reached about age 12, so does he get a gift certificate or does he get a toy? Because he'd be playing with a toy. I ended up asking the mother, and she suggested the gift certificate. I think in the end we probably gave him both so that he could interact with both groups, the older kids and the younger kids. But my only solution was to simply ask, because I couldn't figure it out.
I love it. What, parents, experts, what do you think?
That's
what
to ask. Yeah.
I think that's great.
Yeah. It's bad to tell. It's never bad to ask.
Yeah.
I think shopping for, my parents and in-laws always had a lot of difficulty trying to shop for our son. Mm-hmm. My daughter, and was a mile long,
right,
and has all these ideas and plays with everything, and Kurt plays with Legos and, you know, very systematic things, and, you know, it used to be like things, but I think just to ask, and it's really great.
Getting them both is perfect.
Pardon?
Getting them both was perfect.
Oh, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You definitely covered all your bases. Well, I think that's what my husband always says. If I have to decide this or that, he's like, if you get them both, go with both.
So,
the important part is that you brought the family into it by asking and respected kind of what their wishes were for the child. So, excellent. All right. Well, it is just about 10:30 now. And I just wanted to offer a few resources. In school, we call it an insider's perspective, and I often find that was more powerful than anything else. So it might be we had to get in a wheelchair, and then we had all these assignments that we had to do on campus, and we had to go to the restroom in the library, which the bathroom stall was like that big, and go get a drink in the cafeteria, where when you're sitting in a wheelchair, you can't reach to get the drink, so then you have to ask somebody. So really getting an insider's perspective, they call it. And there were two resources that I found which were kind of off color, or not your typical ones that I would have thought of. But one actually was on, I came home and my husband was watching MTV, and I thought, what are you doing watching this slut in our house? And he's like, oh no, come sit, you're watching your phone. And it was called The World of Jinx, and this guy went out and he wanted to, I see you nodding your head, he wanted to learn more about autism. And so he went out and made friends, and I guess somebody suggested, oh, you think you have to meet, I think his name was Chad, you have to meet Chad, who was an older adult, 19 or so. And it was just kind of getting involved. This guy got involved in his life and took him different places. So that gave a nice insider's perspective of, one, how to interact and be a friend and facilitate meaningful interactions, but also just the experiences that Chad had in doing that. So if you get a chance to look that one up. And then the other one was after I had spoken with Gary Sweetman about this, the fall gathering, I was coming home and Focus on the Family was on. And I think it's Chuck Olson, his daughter Emily has, he's an author, and his daughter Emily has a little guy with autism, and I kid you not, they were just talking on that radio broadcast about the little guy with autism and what really helped them in church when he was falling down and having a meltdown. And she said it was just somebody being present, not necessarily saying, what can I do? Because she's like, I don't know, you know, if I knew what to do, I would do it. And Emily said, well, that's okay. I'm just going to wait here until we think of something. I just said that was so powerful to her, just to stand there. So again, kind of asking, you know, if you're intruding or not, or and just the presence. So those are a little bit of the insider's perspectives that I thought were a little bit different. But I want to give a warm round of applause to Roxanne and Chuck for joining us. And we appreciate you.